Yesterday, I was at a memorial service for a Unitarian Universalist minister, colleague, friend, and mentor, the Reverend Dr. Brandock Lovely, Brandy, of Neighborhood Church in Pasadena. It was a remarkable celebration of a life, and we kind of brought together the old gang, the generation ahead of me that has survived to this day, and my own cohort, many of whom came from across the country to celebrate. I'm sure some of you from the Whittier area remember fondly Rob Eller Isaacs. He was there doing one of the eulogies, and my friend Bob Ross and Silvio Nardoni, and one of my seminary classmates, Earl Holt. And it was quite a celebration of quite a life. And I was reflecting on the gift that Brandy gave me when I was a young pup. And he asked me, "Well, John, how are your sermons?" And I said, I think they're pretty good. He said, "Are you consistent?" I said, "Yeah, I think I'm pretty consistent." He said, "Then you're mediocre. The only way you're ever going to soar is to take chances, in public, to reach for that golden ring, and sometimes to fall flat on your face, but to try to speak and to wrestle with real issues and in good faith." And those words have really informed my preaching. I understand that there are sermons that I do that I have a point of view that I want you to get. There are other sermons that I just don't have a clue. And I'm thinking out loud and trying to find out the meaning of what I'm wrestling with from the talk back. It's one of the reasons that we're one of the few congregations that still regularly does a talk back. I wouldn't miss it, except maybe this week if my voice goes. And there are sermons where I come to the end of it. I've tried to organize my thinking around an important issue and wrestle with it in public. And when I come to the end, it's still a close call. Brandy used to say that the great gift that he gave his congregation was that the important issues, the truly great ones, not the abstract philosophical ones, but the truly great issues of how do we live our values, he modeled in struggle. In struggle, trying to organize and express the deepest issues of how we live together, how we learn how to love, how we learn how to forgive and reconcile. These are the great issues, not whether God lives in the sky or in the earth. We can argue about those things, but the great issues, what do we do now with our tender hearts and our sometimes hard shells and carapaces? And he was exemplary in that, and he taught my generation a lot. And I was thinking about it because this is one of those sermons that's about process. It's about thinking and engaging something important about how we see each other and how we see our history. Strangely, perhaps, Ed's reading fits in perfectly with my theme today about rewriting the past. And the genesis for this sermon wasn't the fact that this is Columbus Day and we are right to have some ambivalent feelings about Columbus, but the genesis of this was a struggle that's going on in the Thomas Jefferson District of the Unitarian Universalist Association, where a significant number of people want to say, we don't want to be the Thomas Jefferson District anymore. Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. And so did George Washington, but George Washington freed his slaves and Jefferson didn't. And is that somebody that we want to hold up and name a district after? It is a very legitimate issue. And I'm going to tell you now, don't look for an answer from me. Look for engaging in how do we understand history, ourselves, and each other in a dynamic way. Thomas Jefferson was undoubtedly a genius. He was an inventor, a vineyardist. He imported some of the first grape cuttings of European vines. He was a wine maker and drinker and inventor, an autodidact who taught himself Greek and Latin before the age of five. He was a legitimate genius. And yet, there is a flaw that is not simply an anachronism. Oh, everybody owned slaves back then. Some of the policies of his government really led to the institutionalization of slavery. He is a mixed human being. And the discussion about whether there should be a district is a legitimate one. Of course, other people say, well, if you can't honor Thomas Jefferson, what kind of saints are you going to have? Because, after all, isn't everyone to some extent flawed? And the answer is yes. But there is not a bright line. There's a big, fat, fuzzy line between what is eccentric, what is time-sensitive, and what is just not okay. The process of history is pretty consistent. We learn about Thomas Jefferson, the great writer, the great intellect, the great inventor, the obsessive-compulsive bookkeeper who wrote down every transaction and went bankrupt at the same time. It wasn't from lack of knowing. And then we learn something else, that he had flaws of character, not simply mistakes, but flaws of character. Now, we can also say that, well, let's look at the biblical story of creation from Genesis 2. Adam, man, generic, not male, is made from the clay. So it makes sense that our heroes and heroines have feet of clay. It's consistent. There are few people who can withstand close and honest scrutiny. And going back to visit the Jefferson legacy is absolutely legitimate and an important conversation to have about our American history, our Unitarian history, and where we live today. But the process is really interesting to me. And I don't want anyone to take the message from this that I spent the whole sermon comparing Thomas Jefferson and Stalin, but I'm going to bring Stalin in here, because the process is we take our heroes, whether they're an American hero or to the Soviet people for a certain amount of time, Stalin, and the first draft of history is often hagiography. We make saints out of them. They have remarkable powers. They do nothing wrong. They are just giants walked amongst us then in those good old days. And then there's a reconsideration. Then we find out about slavery. We find out about not simply slavery, but not freeing the slaves. The Soviets took Stalin from his high perch and his plasticized, waxy effigy in the Kremlin that I visited 43 years ago, and they moved him away. They tore him down. He was the icon that was clasted, and iconoclast brings down icons. Eventually, all icons do get clasted. They get cast down and shattered. And then there's often another reexamination. From hero to villain to something in between that looks more human and more balanced. Now, it's not my job to rehabilitate either Jefferson or Stalin, but to talk about those phases. When I was in Russia last summer, Stalin was on his way to being fully rehabilitated with about as much perspective and nuance as his original sainthood, if you can have atheistic, communistic saints, which you can, incidentally. And people were saying to me, you don't understand Stalin, he was really a good guy, the trains ran on time, he defended the homeland, all of this stuff. What we're looking for in history is some way of understanding the full humanity of heroes, of villains, of ourselves. Mark Twain wrote that if any man received a telegram saying, all is known, flee, we'd be out the door without packing our bags. That human beings carry around with us some guilty secrets. And there are very few perfect lives, and there are very few saints that will withstand real scrutiny of history. That's why the job of the devil's advocate, when somebody is going to be canonized as a saint, there is the devil's advocate that argues against the sainthood. The devil's advocate always has an easy job, because there's always humanity underneath. There's always complexity. These stages that I'm talking about go not just for Jefferson or Stalin as two examples, but when we look at the heroes and heroines of history, all of them, upon deep scrutiny, have flaws of character, sins of both omission, when they did not speak out, and commission, when they spoke badly or acted badly. Whether we're talking about Luther or JFK or Martin Luther King, we're dealing with people who have flaws. Whether we're dealing with Picasso or Mozart or Emily Dickinson, or most problematic of all for probably Unitarians and Universalists, on the women's side is Margaret Sanger, who with all of her good works in terms of women's reproductive freedom believed and wrote about how good eugenics were. Our legacies are morally complex. It applies to our holidays. The Thanksgiving that I celebrated as a youth was kind of an eye-opener when an American Indian friend of mine gave me his version of the Thanksgiving story, and it was somewhat different, I have to say. And so Thanksgiving gets reconsidered. Columbus Day clearly needs to be reconsidered. Do we throw out our history because some of our heroes are really flawed? Do we make peace with it? Do we try to find some way of not rehabilitation, but reconciliation with the errors of omission and commission of our nation, of our community, and of ourselves? This process of building up into an ideal and tearing down and then finding reconciliation is a clear dialectical formula, and it involves people, it involves history, it involves events, and it also involves relationships. I marry people. I marry people all of the time. I'm a serial marrier. My wife is always doing the old jokes, you married him? Well, I mean, really. And from the honeymoon to the reconsideration to the reconciliation is the same kind of journey. We fall in love with ideals. We wake up one morning or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I think Raymond Chandler describes meek housewives looking at the necks of their sleeping, snoring husbands and glancing over at the butcher knife on the table. And that's usually quite a dreadful epiphany for people who have come from the, I'm going to love you forever and ever and you're perfect in every way, to, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? To the Tevye question, do you love me? Do I what? After 25 years, do I what? This is how we find, or try to find, try to seek some kind of balance with our individual stories, our national stories, our great holidays, our great holy days. It is never too late to re-examine the past, to go back and look at Jefferson, look at Columbus, look at Stalin, look at Mozart, look at all of these people. We don't want our histories cleaned up. We want them to be real. It's said that no man is a hero to his valet, because the valet knows all the dirty secrets. But it is also said, because every aphorism has an equal and opposite, that to understand is to forgive. And that if we know enough about a person and their background and their stories, we don't necessarily approve, but we begin to find the balance of the imperfect human who, like us, struggles in the world. Go back and rethink history and rewrite history, not to tear down and not to smooth over and polish into something that it was not, but in order to understand. In order to understand our own values, the width and depth of our own hearts, and to practice understanding that leads to sometimes forgiveness, but more often reconciliation. I see this all of the time in Unitarian Universalism. You would be amazed, those of you who were not, there may be one or two of you who were not born Unitarian Universalists. Yes? Okay. One of the great things that our churches and fellowships do is we help people find reconciliation with their religious pasts. I often have people come into my office or coffee shop or wherever it is I'm hanging out who have been traumatized by their original backgrounds. And there's often a lot of anger. And what I consider success is for people to find peace with their birth religions. Not to leave us and go away necessarily, but that sometimes happens and it's okay. But to find a gentle place in their hearts and memories for how they lived in their own youth. To find peace with the past, not to change it into something it wasn't, not to idealize it, not to destroy it, but to find a gentle place in our hearts for those things that have hurt us, for those things that inform us. All of this is really about something very simple in its idea and hard in practice. It's mindfulness. It is looking with an attempt of objective eyes and open hearts and open minds to find those things that are nourishing, to step back from those things which we personally found toxic, and to find a balance of how much to pack from our yesterdays to take to our future. Because all of us have choices about what we pack and about what we leave and how we carry it. This is one of those sermons that doesn't have an answer on an issue, but it is a process, I think, for understanding how we are with ourselves when we look in the mirror, with the people we love in our families when we look at them with panic or anger or love, and how we look at our history. The good, the bad, the ugly. And the only way that we can change history is by not repeating it. We never change history or prevent a catastrophe by whitewashing our heroes, nor by destroying everyone, but by understanding in a nuanced way, we can take a step into a future that is a reflection of our carefully examined and chosen values.